Welcome to this week's episode of the Blue Box Podcast. Brought to you by Starburst Magazine, the world's longest-running magazine of fantastic films and television.
People of the world, spice up your life, and welcome back to the Blue Box Podcast. I loved this week's episode. I'm still buzzing, to be honest. I had a great time. We're very excited to talk about this one.
Yeah, welcome back to the Blue Box Podcast. I'm a lot healthier than I was last week. I've bi-generated and excited to talk about The Giggle.
Indeed. So I guess we'll start off with the usual initial thoughts and marks out of 10. You want to go?
Okay, there's a lot I liked about this episode. I love Neil Patrick Harris as the toy maker. I love getting to see Shooty Getwer as the new Doctor. I thought the bi-generation was a really fun way of introducing him and it getting a multi-Doctor story, in a way, into the 60th anniversary. For me, I think I actually enjoyed it a little less than the first two specials. I think my main criticism, and this is probably a good criticism to have, is that it seemed like there was too much for 1 hour of story. I felt like it could have been 90 minutes or even two episodes.
I've seen a lot of people saying that, actually. I would agree with that.
Yeah, I thought the satirical idea at the start of, oh, the human race are all going insane, going fully individualistic, that is such a great, like, piece of satire, and I felt there was more to do with that rather than just, it felt like very quickly resolved. And similarly, yeah. I wanted more of John Logie Baird. I wanted the Doctor to meet him.
Yeah, that would have been cool to have more of the, like, historical element. I definitely think that was a bit of a waste of a historical character. Yeah, they kind of did that last week as well with, like, Isaac Newton just bringing him in randomly and then kind of not really, you know, using that to its full potential. So I hope that's not kind of a pattern, like bringing in a historical figure just for the kind of lols in a way, like, and then sort of not really doing anything with it. Like,
yeah. I didn't mind it last week because I thought that was just more of a gag, whereas here he was sort of, he was integral to the story, and it felt like a bit of the story that kind of got skipped when the Doctor was going back to the past to meet him and investigate what was going on there, and then sort of went straight into the toy maker's
realm. Okay. Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think we could definitely have had another half an hour and done, or even like another 15 minutes and done like more with that. So I would definitely agree with that. Marks out of 10 then?
8.
Eight, okay, solid. Well, I was a 9 out of 10. Loved this episode. I was far more enamoured with this episode than I was with the last two. I just feel like Doctor Who is back, baby. Like, this is what I wanted. Like, this is what I was looking for with the first two episodes, really. Like, it felt far more like the Doctor Who that I remember, the kind of, you know, really creepy, like, the sort of the brilliant scenes with Donna and the puppet and some really creepy stuff in there. Neil Patrick Harris smashed it out of the park. Absolutely loved that man. He was just champagne casting for that role. Like, it's amazing that Russell T. Davies actually said in Doctor Who Unleashed that he didn't actually write the role with Neil Patrick Harris in mind. Like, he hadn't thought of him to begin with. But obviously people pointed out afterwards, you know, Neil Patrick Harris actually does puppeteering as a hobby. He can juggle, he can sing, he can dance. Like, he was just an obvious casting choice and he absolutely nailed it. And I thought it was a really clever take on an old character. And just Russell T. Davies never fails with the kind of the evil dance entrances. Like, I've seen so many comments on, like, YouTube videos of that scene where it's just like, the master, I am the king of the evil dance entrance, the toy maker, hold my puppet. Like, just like, you know, it's just, I just thought that scene was utter genius. Like, quite possibly the best scene in the entirety of Doctor Who.
Oh yeah, I've watched that like 10 times now. It's great. I just feel like, you know, Not to dig on the Jodie Whittaker era too much, but in that last Jodie Whittaker few specials, she was literally in a same-sex love story, and yet all the vibes were very straight. And now Russell T Davies is back. We've got Spice Up Your Life.
Yes.
We've got Shoot to Get. We're running around with no trousers. We've got Everybody Loves the Balls.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Doctor Who is a queer show again.
Literally. I was going to say that. I was like, the campness is back and I'm here for it. I am here for it. I love like Russell T Davies's interpretation, and that's what the show is all about. Like, dance numbers like that. That kind of crazy kind of little aside where you just have a mad dance number, that's to me is what Doctor Who is all about. Like, you've got to have the kind of, obviously you've got to have the tragedy in there, you've got to have all of the dark stuff in there, but moments like that are what makes it for me. So I was absolutely, yeah, I think they smashed it out of the park, to be honest, with this episode. Definite 9 out of 10 for me. The only thing, I mean, I'm sure we will get into it, but I'm just going to say it. I'm just going to come out with it. I did not like By Generation one bit. Like, I'm just going to put that out there. I'm sure we will get onto this. But yeah, that was the reason I gave it 9 out of 10. Would have been a 10 out of 10, and then they ruined it at the last minute with the By Generation stuff for me.
I didn't mind it. I thought it was, I mean, it could have maybe had a bit more setup, a hint that something like that could be coming. I just thought it was a fun way of giving the 14th Doctor a good ending where he gets to, you know, have the quiet life, and also, you know, getting a little bit of the two of them together. For me, the bit that I didn't like that sort of jumped the shark for me was when he hit the TARDIS with the magic hammer and it created another TARDIS. I thought that was too silly for me.
Yeah, I was going to say I'm sure, get on to my thoughts on By Generation when we bring on this week's guest, because we'll see what she has to say about it as well. But I mean, the By Generation was bad enough in itself, but then, like, the whack-a-mole TARDIS that, you know, would miraculously just have another TARDIS, I was like, the least you could have done is not give him a TARDIS. Like, it's just, anyway, we will, I'm sure, go into more detail on that, because it is time, I think, to bring on this week's special guest. So we have a really exciting guest on for you all today, who's going to be participating in our quiz and sharing her thoughts on The Giggle and all things Hooniverse. We've got Kate Fathers, who is another Starburst writer and is the author of the Bookworm Hole column for Starburst. So she is a big Whovian, so she's going to be joining us today to share her thoughts. Hello, Kate.
Hello.
Hi, lovely to have you on. How are you this morning?
I'm good. Sleep deprived, but good.
Aren't we all? Yeah, thank you for coming on to share your thoughts on this week's episode. So I guess, should we start off by getting your kind of initial reaction, maybe, you know, anything you kind of really liked or disliked, and then maybe a mark out of 10.
Okay. So overall, I thought it was a great episode. I loved Neil Patrick Harris. He just seemed like he was having a blast the whole time. but I don't think I've seen the episodes of the Toymaker from, what was it, the first Doctor's run? But
yeah.
I quite enjoyed him now. He was, like, really properly menacing, but also, you know, a little nuts. The Spice Girls song was really great. Loved seeing Mel.
that was
a really sweet moment, and absolutely adored the 15th Doctor. I'm so looking forward to him. He was just stole the show the second he showed up.
Yeah, no, Shuti Gatwa does seem great. Yeah, cool. So do we have a mark out of 10 then for the episode? I think Kieran gave it an 8. I gave it a 9. We were both fairly impressed.
I would probably say an 8. I think the stuff with the bi regeneration kind of knocked it down a couple points for me.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
A little bit on the confusing side, could have been explained a touch better.
Yeah. No, I would definitely agree with that. I had to knock off a point for the bi regeneration. But yeah, no, I think other than that, definitely a solid episode. Was there anything else that you kind of thought? Because me and Kieran were both agreeing that we thought it could actually potentially have been longer. We kind of felt like the action was sort of crammed in slightly, and we would have liked to potentially have seen, had like, you know, another half an hour and seen more of John Logie Baird and things like that. So I don't know if you would agree with that, or if there's anything else that you kind of thought could have been done better or been added or anything.
I totally think it could have been longer. It felt like it maybe should have been, you know, sort of in classic Doctor Who tradition, like a two-part finale episode.
Yeah.
To explain things like that by regeneration, which it just totally glossed over. But then for me, like once that happened, I just kept sort of scratching my head for most of the rest of the episode, which took a little bit away from it. And it felt a little redundant as well. I also felt like if it was longer, they could have given Donna and Mel a bit more to do. They just sort of, Donna had, you know, a couple of moments and Mel had a couple of moments, but other than that, they mostly just stood around there.
I liked how Mel got to do some computer programming. She like made that satellite move to where they could fire the laser at it, which was nice, because like in the Sylvester McCoy series, she said she was a computer programmer, but you never once saw her touch a computer. So they're actually bringing in some of her individual bespoke skills.
Yeah, that was quite nice. On that though, I did kind of think, I mean, I love Donna, don't get me wrong. Far be it from me to question Donna's abilities, but I did kind of think when, you know, they were, I think it was when they were working on moving the satellite or using the galvanic beam or something, they were saying, like the doctor says, oh, you know, there's no one faster in London on a keyboard. And then Donna starts talking to Mel about the code or whatever. And I was kind of, part of me was kind of thinking, I mean, I don't know what she's been doing in the 15 years that she's not been with the doctor, but she was a secretary. Like she's fast on a keyboard, but she doesn't know code. Like I was kind of thinking, I think this is a little bit beyond Donna's pay grade, to be honest. Yeah. But I mean, we can overlook it. Who knows what she's learned from.
Well, she does have a high pay grade now.
You can hand wave it away a little bit as a, you know, maybe it's that like little bit of the doctor left in her, I guess. Maybe.
Actually, to be fair, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, potentially that's because of the Doctor Donna and the knowledge that she now has. Yeah, that would make sense to be fair.
My favourite Donna moment in the episode was her whacking that doll into the wall and then kicking the baby doll across the room. I just love her moments of comic violence like that.
Hello, what was it? Hello, Suki, my name's Donna. Now I think that you're a Donna. And I was just like, yes!
Yeah, I love that, because I think what we all wanted to do to those really creepy dolls.
Indeed. They were very creepy, actually. I think the costume is it the costume department? I don't know what department. The set and prop department, I guess.
Puppetry department.
Newly founded puppetry department. But I think they did a really good job, like with the puppets, because they were very, very creepy. And I love the fact that they used real puppets rather than just doing, you know, CGI, or because they were originally thinking of doing that, apparently, like they weren't going to have real puppets. But I think it's really nice that the actors actually had that to react to, because they were creepy.
Yeah, puppets are creepy. I'm really pleased that they're doing practical effects. Like, wasn't it, I think in the previous episodes, the Meep was a puppet, and the long arms and things were also all like practical things. So I'm glad they're doing that, because it'll age a lot better. But then there's not enough love, I think, anymore for practical effects, unless you're, you know, Guillermo del Toro.
I think it's
that they're going that direction instead.
Yeah, I think there is just something like a lot better about it, because like obviously you need CGI for certain things, but I think a lot of the time nothing beats, you know, having that, you know, building that prop in real life and actually getting the actors to react to it in real life. So yeah, I'm pleased they're moving in that in that direction as well, definitely. On that note, I believe it is now time for...
It's time for the Blue Box Quiz.
Yes, indeed. It is that... I love the jingle that we've made for that. I'll never get bored of it. It is indeed that time where we are going to be putting your Doctor Who knowledge to the test and see how closely you were watching the episode, how much were you paying attention. It is time for the Blue Box Quiz. Kate, are you ready?
I'm ready.
She's ready. The score to beat, I believe, is... I think, is it five?
We need a leaderboard.
We need a leaderboard. We'll gather up the score, but I believe the score to beat is 5 out of 7.
Yeah, I think that's what Paul got.
I think that's what Paul got. Mike got none, I believe.
He got one, I think.
Did he get one? Okay, yeah, right. Well, he got one. Let's be fair. Okay, so I believe the score to beat is 5 out of 7. And there are, I think, 8 questions today. So you've got more of a chance to get to build up those correct answers. Question number one. Oh, actually, to be fair, I think we've already mentioned some of the answers to these in our discussion so far, but what is the name of the inventor of TV?
Oh, good God. Starts with an L, doesn't it?
Sorry?
It starts with an L, doesn't it?
There is an L in it. It doesn't start with an L.
One of his names does.
One of the names starts with an L. I think we have actually said his name like in the discussion so far, but it is an odd one.
Oh God, I do not know.
Fair enough, Kieran. Do you want to jump in if you know the answer?
Yes, it's John Logie Baird.
It is indeed John Logie Baird. Yeah, I actually loved like the inclusion of a historical figure. To be fair, because in Doctor Who Unleashed, they were saying, well, Russell T. Davis was saying how he was looking for a villain essentially, and he came across Stooky Bill, the fact that the first ever image projected on television was that of a puppet, ventriloquist dummy, Stooky Bill, and he just thought, you know, well, that's a ready-made villain right there. But then he decided that obviously it couldn't just be a puppet, because it would be quite difficult to have the villain as being this puppet. So that's why he kind of then thought of the toy maker, and you know, if it's a puppet, who's the puppeteer? So I think that was a very clever idea to use that to bring the toy maker back. But I, like, when I googled it after the episode, I couldn't believe that was Stooky Bill is genuinely a real thing. Like, it's genuinely the first image ever projected on television, and I was looking at like the real pictures of him, like, and I like on Google, and I was just like, that is creepy. The fact that is genuinely the first image ever broadcast, like, that's there's something slightly terrifying about that.
No one watched it though. No one had a TV.
Yeah, to be fair, it's not like anyone saw it or it made up a proper TV program, but still very creepy.
I thought it was interesting to bring in some television history, but you kind of think, like, last year's special, The Power of the Doctor, was meant to be for the 100th anniversary of the BBC. And that felt more like a Doctor Who anniversary special. And then this episode felt more like it was celebrating the history of the BBC in that way. I don't know, that's not a criticism, it's just an odd coincidence.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, actually, to be fair. I think you could almost swap them round, because I do definitely think that people were also, as we said last week, people were kind of looking for more of a 60th anniversary spectacular for Doctor Who, and we definitely got that more with the BBC 100 Years special. So, yeah, they almost would have worked better the other way around. That's that's an interesting point. Question number two, then, and this one is actually quite a difficult one, because I think it's only mentioned once, but what is the name of John Logie Baird's assistant then, who goes to buy Stooky Bill off the toy maker?
Oh God, I do not know that.
I definitely did not retain that information. No, that's fair enough. It is quite an obscure one. I'm pretty sure it's only mentioned once, but I was looking for names in the quiz when I was writing the quiz questions, so that, so I thought that was quite a good one to throw in there. Kieran, do you know?
No.
It is only mentioned once, but I believe he calls him Charlie. John Logie Baird refers to him as Charlie at one point. Just fun fact there. Which I felt very sorry for Charlie, actually, because we see like later in the episode when he's actually turned into a puppet by the toy maker.
Mm-hmm.
Which was,
yeah, I'm quite glad he got to live at the end. He did not deserve that for just, you know, buying something for his boss.
Yeah. I know. It was really creepy that, actually, like the idea of anyone who loses the toy maker's game getting turned into a puppet. So yeah, that was very, very creepy. And obviously that little snippet that we got of like the doctor as a puppet as well. Which was kind of meant to be showing if he lost his game to the toy maker, I guess that was kind of meant to be showing what would happen to him, which I thought was quite creepy, because we don't often get a sense of the doctor in jeopardy. I guess he's usually quite sure of himself, so that was quite an interesting feeling of being outmatched in some ways by an opponent.
Mm-hmm. It upped the stakes a bit.
Yeah, definitely. It's not often you get a worthy opponent, really, in Doctor Who. You kind of always feel like the Doctor is you know, outranks them, but yeah, definitely a close match. Question number three. As we know, in this episode, all of the human race is being driven mad by the toy maker through the spike or the giggle that he's hidden in all TV screens of Stooky Bill's giggle since the beginning of television. But what is the name of the unit wristband invention that they have apparently invented to protect people from the spike?
Oh, there's another one I don't know.
It's not going too well, but to be fair, they are quite difficult questions this week, I think.
I feel like I should have rewatched the episode before this.
You didn't do your homework.
No.
Kieran, do you...
It was a very sci-fi word. Was it the Z-Dex?
It was. Mm. It was the Z-Dex, which, yeah, as the inventor of it says, it's just a cool name, really, isn't it?
I love how they brought Trinity Wells back to have her do an incredibly unsubtle dig at anti-vaxxers.
Kieran, you've ruined my next quiz question. It's fine, don't worry. I was going to ask what the name of the American news presenter is. Yeah, Trinity Wells, who was a staple of Russell T. Davis's era. So it's good to have her back.
She's gone downhill, though.
Yeah.
She looks like she has her own show instead of just being a regular newscaster.
Yeah, she should. She should get her own show. She should. Trinity Wells for the win.
Well, it was a different channel, wasn't it? It wasn't the news channel anymore. It was more like a kind of Alex Jones-esque...
Oh, right, so she does actually have
show. I think it was the Trinity Wells show.
Oh, right. Oh, amazing. I didn't actually pick up on that. That's really cool. Because I only noticed it, like, I didn't actually know who she was at first. I only picked up that it was her, like, just as her bit was finishing. I was like, wait, is that Trinity Wells? But yeah, that really kind of took me back, because it was obviously, like, the Sarah Jane Adventures, they used her in that as well. She was a familiar face on the early Russell T. Davis episodes and throughout that era. So yeah, that was very nice seeing her back. Mm-hmm. A little piece of Doctor Who history there. A little Easter egg for people who recognised her. And I also think it's quite nice to bring an American like presence in there as well, to kind of show that it's like happening all around the world. I've always thought that was quite good about Trinity Wells. She's good.
Makes the show a little more global, which it kind of is now.
yeah. I mean, it's got massive in America, hasn't it? The show. It's because it's obviously that's partly why it's been snapped up by Disney Plus, you know, to mm-hmm. be shown over there, because it's like I didn't actually realize like how popular it had got in America, but it's got quite a big fan base, I believe. So
I think it was like in the Matt Smith era that they really started trying to publicize it over there.
Right.
Like, I remember they went to Comic-Con for the first time.
Yeah.
And then I think it's slightly built up since then. I don't know how well the Jodie Whittaker era went down in the States.
Mm.
Yeah, I have no idea, because I kind of dropped off on my viewing. So
right,
I know
yeah.
it aired.
So
it aired on North American television stations, but I don't know how much of a splash it made. But the Matt Smith era definitely did.
Mm. Yeah,
that was all over the place for a while.
Yeah, because I was going to say, you've got like the kind of slight inside knowledge of having lived in Canada for quite a while, so I don't know how it was kind of received there.
It was quite popular. Still, I think, kind of a niche thing, like a lot of sci-fi still is. You know, I think even as big as Star Trek has gotten and how many iterations of it there are, it's still kind of, you know, it's still Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you did see a lot of North American people talking about it more, I think, especially during the Matt Smith era when they were doing Comic-Con in California a lot. But I think it did start to drop in popularity a little bit. I don't know if it was because other things maybe took off more, like Game of Thrones started getting people's attention instead.
Yeah, well, that was quite a phenomenon.
Yeah, but it was quite popular. And I think it's always been kind of like a niche thing. I think, what was it, for the first couple of seasons, when it first came back, Canada was helping to fund it, I think.
Oh, okay.
So it was airing on Canadian TV, I think, maybe a little bit before US television.
Right, okay. I didn't realise that. Interesting, interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. It sounds like the pattern of the show has kind of like slightly followed like the popularity in the UK, because obviously the popularity here sort of started to drop off a little bit as well, I think, during sort of towards the end of Matt Smith's era, kind of Peter Capaldi's era, and then obviously like dramatically declined during Jodie Whittaker's era. So it sounds like it's sort of mirrored the response over here, which is interesting.
I know a lot of people who've said that they haven't watched it since David Tennant or since Matt Smith, which is why I think bringing Tennant back for this anniversary was a good idea, because hopefully it's brought a lot more people back on, and hopefully they'll stick around now that they've seen a bit of Shooty Getwa.
Yeah, I think the thing is, okay, so one of my slight criticisms with this episode, and that we're gonna do it, we're gonna get into the bi regeneration, because I think that I have a whole rant on this. Well, not a rant as such, but basically, to me, it kind of felt a little bit like the David Tennant show, and I just kind of felt like, you know, The one of the main reasons that the bi generation kind of annoyed me was not so much the idea of it as a concept, but also because it's obviously specifically been written in to kind of give David Tennant's Doctor a happy ending. And to me, that really kind of irritated me, because for me, the whole point is the Doctor doesn't get a happy ending. He's not allowed to have a happy ending. That's literally the whole point of this character. He doesn't get to retire and have a happy life.
But why not?
Because because that detracts from like the tragedy of the show. The whole point of regeneration is that it's like, you're supposed to be sad, you're supposed to mourn the previous Doctor, but you move on and you get to love and know this new Doctor. And I just think, contrary to it being a good way to introduce Shooty Gatwa, I felt really sorry for him, because I just felt like that would be the worst possible way to come on to a show and come into that role. Basically just being made to completely play second fiddle to David Tennant, because we're all, let's face it, no one's really paying any attention to Shooty Gatwa because we're all there going, oh, you know, David Tennant, isn't it sad? Isn't it lovely? He gets. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, the idea that there's two doctors that now have a TARDIS and can go running around the universe, it takes away from the fact that this character is, it's weird enough to have two of any character. Like, that concept doesn't work generally in any franchise, but let alone in Doctor Who, where the whole point is, you know, this character is the last of his kind, the lonely god, the lonely Time Lord, just him and his box off to see the universe. It's just him. There's no one else left. And now there's two of them.
Well, there's already 14 of them.
But they're not. They're the same person at different points. So there's not.
Yeah, but there's time travel. So
I know, but it's just like, I thought it was. You can't have two doctors running around that could, it just really made it cheap for me. Like, it just, and it just felt very like the whole thing of, you know, conveniently having a second TARDIS and running off for adventures to Mars with Rose as well. I was just like, no, absolutely not. Like, and I was just there like, the whole point is that you've got to have the morning. Like, okay, like, we get it. David Tennant was great. He was a great doctor. We love him. You know, he's had his time now. You know, it's time to say goodbye, David. You've had your moment. Like, it's, I just thought it would have, the episode would have been so much better if they had done a shock regeneration, because normally you can't do that. Normally you can't have a shock regeneration because you've got to have the big lovely send-off to the previous doctor, which is fair enough. So you've got to set it all up, you've got to have a nice regeneration episode, and they regenerate at the end of the episode, and you have the big lovely goodbye speech and yada yada yada, and that's how you normally have to do regeneration, which is fair enough because you want to give the actor a good send-off. This would have been a prime opportunity to do a shock regeneration, because David Tennant's already had his moment. David Tennant's already had his big goodbye. It would have been the perfect opportunity to just do a, you know, that whole build up with the Toy Maker speech, when it was like, I played the first game with the first Doctor, I played the second game with this Doctor, I will play the final game with the next Doctor. And I was there, I was so excited. I was like, yes, oh my God, Shooty Gat was coming, perfect. Smashed it out of the park, shock regeneration. Couldn't do that at any other time. Like, it's, you know, it's perfect. We still get the nice goodbye with the companions on either side of him. David Tennant still gets to say his final Alonzi, but then he's gone. Shooty's there. Wham! Smashed out of the park. And then they go and do that, and they have the bi-generation. And I'm like, why? Why?
Because you get the two of them together. I thought it was a lovely way of having a bit of multi-doctor in the anniversary. I think you're right that they could have it. It could have overshadowed Shooty, but I think he's a good enough actor that he didn't let that happen. I think he owned every second of it he was in.
I think it was clear
from the moment he was there that he was the Doctor now. Tennant was already sort of going to the sidelines in a way.
I got the opposite.
He stood out more for me. Like, I don't think he was overshadowed, at least from my perspective. Like, it worked for me. But I do agree that I think the whole bi-regeneration thing, I think, worked more from like a practical outside the story way. Mm. Because now if, you know, Russell T. Davies wants to bring back David Tennant's Doctor, he doesn't have to like create some kind of wacky reason why the 10th Doctor looks older now. You know, we already do have another David Tennant Doctor wandering around his age with the Metacrisis Doctor, which, I think, as I said before, makes the whole another Doctor has gone off with a family thing feel kind of redundant to me, because we already did that.
Exactly what I was thinking as well. Like, how many bloody versions of David Tennant are we going to have? You know, they've already done that. They've already got another version of David Tennant's Doctor.
We could have a multi-Doctor story with three. We could have a multi-Doctor story with three David Tennants.
I just felt like it. I don't know. I can see why they did it, but I disagree. I felt like it definitely overshadowed Shooty. Mm. I just felt like, you know, it was the David Tennant show. Nobody's going to be looking at Shooty because it was all about how sad it is and how tragic with David Tennant. And oh, isn't it lovely? He gets a happy ending with Donna. And I was like, no, he doesn't. No, he doesn't get a happy ending. That defies the entire point. Like,
you really hate any happiness in this show, don't you?
I mean, it just takes away. Like, obviously, you get moments of happiness. Mm-hmm. And that garden scene was lovely. Like, I loved that garden scene. But to me, there was no reason why that couldn't have been Shooty. I thought that garden mm-hmm. scene could have just been Shooty Gatwa's doctor acclimatizing to his new body, saying goodbye to Donna and her family, and then running off on his adventures again. Because, you know, we've had mm-hmm. scenes where the doctor has lunch with his friend and their family. Like, we've done mm-hmm. that before. You know, he's had Christmas dinner with Rose, and you, no one's saying that you can't have moments of happiness and moments of, you know, dinner with the family, and, you know, they're always there waiting for him. But the whole point of regeneration is that it's a kind of death. You know, the old doctor mm-hmm. has to die. It's a bittersweet concept, and you're detracting from the entire point of the concept if you make it not bittersweet because everyone's alive and everyone's happy. You know, it's sort of,
well, it's good to do something different with it then, because we've had plenty of bittersweet regenerations. So is it not mm-hmm. is it not worth mixing it up for a change and giving him, you know, a happy ending this time?
I mean, mm. I think the thing, yeah, I don't know. I just feel like, particularly because we've already had the meta crisis, we've already got another version of the 10th Doctor that might have built a TARDIS and be having, you know, his own adventures in the parallel universe with Rose. We can't have it in this universe. We can't have two versions of the Doctor running around. Like, it's one person, you know. It's not having two people, as I said before. It makes it so that it's like the character's no longer special. There's two of him, you know. It's not the lonely god off to see the universe now. Like, it's mm-hmm. I don't know. I can see totally why they did it, but I feel like they really missed the mark there on the writing personally.
I think this is where a little bit of extra time would have worked to explain, like, you know, does the 14th Doctor, like, is he going to regenerate himself and there's going to be two copies of the Doctor running around forever? Or does, like, he, you know, go to therapy and then, you know, live out however long a life he'll have and then, you know, sort of burst into regeneration energy and then we're back to just one Doctor? Because they kind of...
So you think he reverts back into...
You know, you know, the 15th Doctor did say something about, like, what was it? That, you know, was it he's better because the 14th Doctor got better?
Oh, yeah. Was it like, we're doing sort of therapy out of order?
Yeah, so it makes you think maybe he's not going to hang around forever. And I'm assuming maybe, like, I don't know, the copy TARDIS just explodes or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
So do we think he lives out his life, then goes back and becomes the 15th Doctor? Or does he just die? Or
I don't know. Maybe he dissolves or something and gets, like, reabsorbed into the original Doctor.
That's an interesting idea.
Maybe we needed a couple more minutes to explain that instead of just, you know, hand-waving it because, you know, the episode was running down and we were running out of time.
I guess not explaining it means it's open for later stories to return to.
I mean, I didn't necessarily have an issue with the concept of bi-generation itself. I guess I just had an issue with it being done on the Doctor. I don't know, it's a bit like, I didn't have an issue with the idea that Time Lords can change gender, and I thought that was great when they did it with the Master and they had Missy, but I didn't like it when it was done to the Doctor. I have no issue with the idea that bi-generation could potentially be a thing and it could happen to other Time Lords. I don't like seeing it done on the Doctor. I have no issue with the idea of the Timeless Child as a concept, but it needs to be a different Time Lord, not the Doctor. I feel like when you do these big things...
But the Doctor's the main character, so they need to have the drama, surely.
But then it's like it makes them kind of too special and they're not special at the same time somehow. I can't quite explain why it is that I don't like it done on the Doctor, but I have no idea with... No issue with exploring these concepts, but not on the Doctor somehow. I don't know why. I can't quite put into words why I have an issue with it, but I just think...
Well, I do feel like the Doctor has gotten to the point over the last, 10 years or something, that, you know, they are, like, the most special person in the universe, and I think that,
yes!
you know, because everything does seem to happen to them, and they are always, like, the crux, I think, of
yes.
every single... issue, I think that does get tiring. I
yes.
really kind of hope that we go away from that in the future and we just have the Doctor being like a weird little space hobo again.
Yes, I think that's what it is. I think that's what it is, because the whole point is that the Doctor is meant to be special, but not special. He's not mm-hmm. special. He's just a Time Lord that stole a TARDIS and ran away. But he obviously is special. We know he is. We know and love him. But he's not special. That's kind of the point. And then when you do all of these things to him, when you make him the Timeless Child, when you make him the first Time Lord to ever bigenerate, when you make him special when he's kind of not supposed to be special.
But it doesn't really change the character that much, though, does it? Like, so he's bigenerated. That doesn't mean that doesn't mean he's going to be a different character going forward. It's still the essential parts of the story are still the same.
Yeah. I mean to be fair, I think it will probably grow on me. I did see an interesting kind of headcanon somewhere online where somebody was saying that they think that the 14th Doctor, that David Tennant's Doctor, is now going to eventually become the Curator Doctor, which I thought potentially kind of worked.
That's fun. Yeah,
that's a nice, interesting little headcanon there. But yeah, I think it is a concept that might grow on me. But again, my main issue is more just the fact that there's now two of them, so therefore, by definition, he's not special anymore. He's no longer like the lonely god that, you know, the one and only, the kind of, I don't know, there's just something about it that, I don't know, it irked me. Let's put it that way. On that note,
did we finish? We've got more quiz.
We have more quiz. The interesting aspect, obviously, in this episode, the time travel back to the 1920s. I did quite like that. It was nice to see a different era. Mm-hmm. What year exactly do the Doctor and Donna travel back to find the toy maker?
Was it, I want to say it's 1926.
So close. 1925.
Damn.
Very, very nearly.
I think that's half a point.
Yeah, let's give half a point for
Yay!
That. You were 1 year out. That was pretty good. Yeah, so they obviously go and find the toy maker in his shop. He's having a fun time in his little, I don't know, I don't quite know what it was, because it wasn't a TARDIS, but it was like some kind of interdimensional
toy box
thingamajiggy, which I thought was quite cool. Okie doke, question number 7, I believe, or 6, because we missed a question out because it was the answer was Trinity Wells. Question number 6 then. What is the name of the robot creature thingy that's working for UNIT?
Is it the Blinks?
It is the Blinks, which yes. I thought were an interesting character.
Yeah.
Finally got a right one.
You finally got a question right. Yay, well one and a half points.
Yeah, it seems like they're really building up a new UNIT team, doesn't it? And there's clearly going to be, we're going to see all those again, the Blinks and Shirley and Mel and everyone.
And this is the first time the Blinx has shown up, because obviously I haven't watched in so long, and I initially thought, did I miss a lot? Was there a really strange robot plot with UNIT in the Jodie Whittaker seasons that I just never heard about?
No, the Blinx is new.
Yeah, they are definitely new. I do wonder whether there's potentially going to be more to that, though. Like, whether they're going to turn out to be evil or something. Because that kind of felt like it came a little bit from nowhere. I wouldn't be surprised if, like, further down the line in the next series, perhaps we have like a storyline where it turns out that the Vlinks are actually not what they seem or something. I don't know.
We'll get the Vlinks' tragic backstory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's too obvious, but I feel like that would make a cool villain if they've kind of like infiltrated UNIT and they're like, you know, sort of they're trusted, and then it turns out that they're
Reminded me a lot of Mr. Smith in Sarah Jane Adventures.
Yes. Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. The sort of, yeah, the kind of like artificial intelligence companion in a way that, that sort of helps out. Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Interesting. We'll see. I hope they come back. I hope they do more with them because I think they were quite a cool concept.
I think they will do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This was an interesting one, which I definitely very much enjoyed. Where does the toy maker supposedly trap the master?
In his gold tooth.
It is. It is in his gold tooth, yeah. Which is, yeah, not the first time that we've seen the master kind of apparently be contained within an inanimate object. Obviously, we have the ring at the end of kind of...
Or picked up by someone with red nail polish.
Yes, always picked up by someone with red nail polish, apparently.
I did wonder if that was actually setting something up or they just did it as a gag, as a throwback to Last of the Time Lords.
I reckon it is setting something up. Perhaps not necessarily for next series, but like further down the line, I think it's definitely setting up that the master is alive and well and
yeah, you always have to have the master out there somewhere.
Yeah,
nod to they escape. It's fine.
Yeah,
we'll see them again in whatever form they decide on.
Definitely, I've seen some fun theories that the person who picked up the tooth was actually the Rani.
Oh. People are always theorising it'll be the Rani.
Well, I mean, to be fair, we are more likely than ever before, I think, to get the Rani back in the next series because, obviously, there's been a lot of speculation that that's the character that Jinx Monsoon is going to be playing, who we know is going to be in the show. So, I mean, it wouldn't be beyond the realms of possibility, I guess. I would quite like to see the Rani. Because I'd quite like to see another Time Lord villain, because I feel like the Master is great, but I feel like he kind of gets a bit more than his fair share of airtime, so it'd be quite cool to see other...
Yeah, you don't want to overplay the Master and that, you know, dynamic too much, because from what I remember, the Rani has a slightly different dynamic with the Doctor, and that would be fun to play with.
Mm. I think she's more, like, scientifically oriented, isn't she? Doing weird, like, research on alien races. I think in the classic series, I thought the Rani never really was that much more than a female master, and they've done an actual female master since. So they would have to like play up on, really build on the differences, like have her do some crazy science, maybe.
And just create a slightly different dynamic. I vaguely remember the classic Rani episodes, like they were, you know, not as combative as the Master ones. I think because there's more of the Master to see, so they've got like this really much more established antagonistic relationship, whereas it was like kind of, you know, more formal Time Lordy relationship with the Rani. So it'd be interesting to see like something like that, like a little stiffer and you know, not like as, you know, they don't know each other that well, which could, you know, when you're trying to defeat someone, could play some kind of part in it.
Yeah, definitely. Interesting. Yeah, I think I've seen some like interesting kind of takes as well. Like a lot of, I've heard quite a lot of people say that they kind of wished that it turned out that Missy was the Rani and not the Master, which I don't know.
No, like why?
Yeah,
she's the Master.
She was a very good Master. Like I thought she was great as the Master, but I can see why some people kind of, I guess, because they then brought Sasha Darwin back like as the Master quite soon after, and I can see why people kind of perhaps felt like it would have made more sense if it turned out Missy was somebody else.
I think that's just people who don't like change. They don't like that Time Lords can change gender and they want to put everything back in place as it was before. I thought Missy was fantastic and I loved her story arc across it as well. I loved her story arc in Series 10 about being the Doctor trying to redeem her and make her good again. And I was a little annoyed when the Sasha Darwin Master didn't even acknowledge that had happened.
Yeah. That's I think that's another criticism people had with the Whittaker era, the fact that they like the it was a bit jarring, like Sasha's interpretation of the Master. It was almost as if all of that hadn't happened with the with Missy.
I liked him. I thought he gave a great performance, and I didn't mind as a concept the Master going evil again, because ultimately they probably always will. But it felt it needed to be acknowledged.
Yeah, no, an interesting one. The final question then, what is the name of the weapon that UNIT uses to try and take out the satellite and stop the signal? To be fair, I think we have actually, mentioned this way earlier in the discussion. I don't know whether it was before you were on the phone, but I believe I did actually say this at some point in the episode.
I believe you did. Did I retain that? No.
fair enough. Kieran, do you want to...
Was it the galvanic beam?
It was. It was the galvanic beam, whatever that is when it's at home. Yeah, just a supersonic alien weapon, I suppose, that the UNIT has somehow managed to invent or got their hands on, yeah. So that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that brings us to the end of the quiz, and I believe if we add up the score, I think was that a 1.5 out of 7? I believe.
Oh, that is tragic.
Was it?
Or two? Or was it 2.5?
I think it was 2.5.
You got the blinks as well, didn't you? Yeah, 2.5 out of 7.
Yeah,
then
2.5.
We will have to start keeping. We should start keeping a leaderboard. Definitely, yes. I think that would be quite fun. I think I definitely am a lot more detail orientated apparently when I watch Doctor Who coming up with these questions, as picking out these little details that I feel aren't always retained. But yeah, well done. That was actually not a bad performance, to be fair, compared to Mike. At any rate, that wasn't bad.
That's something.
Yeah, no, that was pretty good. That was pretty good.
That was fun though. Thank you.
Oh, no worries. And thank you for coming on. If you stick around, it would be quite interesting to get your take for this new section.
Who knew?
Yes, indeed. Who knew? Not a new section. Sorry, I made that sound like it was an entirely new segment in the show. Not a new section, but...
Just missed an S there.
Who knew? The section where we discuss any Doctor Who news, any controversies or anything that we find interesting that's current in the world of Doctor Who. And I believe we have a couple of little news stories today, which is stuff about the Christmas special.
Okay.
Yes, so the BBC have released the Goblin Song, which is a little musical number which appears in the Christmas special. They've released the clip of that scene on YouTube. I think in the hope that we'll all learn the song and then we'll be able to sing along to it after our Christmas dinner. I'll be honest, I haven't memorized all the lyrics yet, but it's a nice camp little musical number in which some goblins sing about eating babies.
It's very, very festive, you know. What else do you want to hear on the after you've eaten your Christmas dinner? I did think it was quite funny, actually. My friend, like, we listened to it, and then my friend was like, I think that sounds a bit like the latest Fall Out Boy album. And then we played like a Fall Out Boy track, and it actually was weirdly similar. Like the beat, like the kind of intro beat, and then like the kind of when the lyrics come in, it was bizarrely similar.
Can't say I noticed that.
So it was quite weird. It was a bit of a weird out of body experience when we were listening to that, because it was quite surprising how similar it was. I believe it was Fall Out Boy. Yeah, pretty sure it was. But yeah, it was weirdly similar. We've also had the little snippet, the little preview of advert, I guess, for the Christmas special, which was nice.
Yeah, there was a little trailer for it, which I think was aired after the giggle.
Okay, I think I missed that one. But I watched the giggle on iPlayer afterwards, and they didn't play anything.
Yeah, I think it is. The trailer is on iPlayer somewhere. Yeah, it's looking fun. It's a nice Christmas adventure with goblins and the new doctor and the new companion looking like they're great fun together.
Mm-hmm. With singing goblins, it sounds like they're doing a bit of a Labyrinth homage.
Yes, yeah, there's definitely a Labyrinth vibe to it.
Do you know, I literally hadn't even thought of that, and now you've said it, I'm like, oh my god, it is literally Labyrinth. That is amazing. I was wondering where it was, like, why it kind of felt familiar, but yeah, that is 100% Labyrinth. That's great. That is gonna be so cool. I did like the fact as well. I thought it was quite interesting. They see it. I mean, I don't know whether it's just taken out of context, but it kind of looks from the trailer as if Shuti Gatwa's doctor is going to meet Ruby Sunday in a club, which I thought was interesting, because it definitely looked like it was the doctor dancing in a nightclub and then, like, spotting Ruby from across the dance floor, which I thought was very interesting.
He seems like a doctor who's got a lot of joy to him. He's a very upbeat, musical doctor, definitely. Which is lovely.
Yeah, nice. Definitely. I mean, you know, he might be 2,000 years old, but, like, he still needs to let his hair down, guys. Come on,
he can rock a kilt.
He can rock a kilt, indeed. I love that.
Might as well cut loose every now and again.
Definitely. I do love that as well. Like, I like the fact that they're kind of paying tribute to his Scottish roots, I guess, and he gets to wear a kilt. That's really cool, because obviously we've had two doctors who are Scottish, and neither of them have worn a kilt. Well, I mean, obviously David Tennant didn't do a Scottish accent, but he's from Scotland, and then obviously Peter Capaldi, and none of them have worn a kilt. We've had far too many Scottish people, not enough kilts, guys.
And I'm glad that he's doing his own accent as well, because he does have a lovely voice, and I'm very excited to hear him say the word TARDIS, because it just sounds very sexy when he says it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. No, he's pretty awesome. I think he's gonna. Mm-hmm. I definitely think he's gonna make a good doctor. There was also another trailer, I think, which was on Disney Plus, which was, like, slightly different to the first trailer. I'm not sure whether the Disney Plus one is, like, exclusive to Disney Plus. I just found it on YouTube.
Oh, I've not seen that.
But yeah, it's a slightly different one, where it kind of, like, not in any great detail, but it kind of, I think it was showing a little bit more of, like, Ruby's backstory, because it showed like a baby being left by a church. I believe that was kind of showing a little bit more of her kind of origins, I guess. So that was an interesting little trailer as well.
The other thing they've revealed is the new Sonic screwdriver, which looks a lot less like a screwdriver. Well, I mean, none of them ever look that much like a screwdriver anyway, but this one is significantly less. Screwdriver shape.
It's like a garage door opener.
Yes, that kind of thing, or a mouse upside down.
Yeah.
My friend said it looked like a spoon, which was an interesting take. Like, it's an interesting design choice. It definitely looks more like a computer mouse than a screwdriver, I would say.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested to see it in action. I'm interested to see it in action because I mean, all the screwdrivers, the doctors have used them in, like, different ways, haven't they? Like, they've never really held them like you would a screwdriver, and I think often it's seen a bit more like a magic wand. So maybe this is a bit more technical. It's a bit more like a gadget in a way, which could be fun.
A bit more like remote control-y, almost, because it looks a bit more like a kind of remote control or something. Yeah. I mean, I'm quite pleased that they are kind of making it. I think they are making an effort to not make the Sonic screwdriver ridiculously overpowered. Like, I feel like it's not, at least we've not had too many kind of, it's not become kind of too much of a convenient plot device, which is nice.
He never used that force field thing again after he used it in the Star Beast. I was expecting more of that, I'm kind of glad of, because it wasn't. It was a bit silly anyway.
Yeah, I'm glad we've not seen a return of that. I mean, I wouldn't mind a return of, like, the kind of the holographic kind of screen thing, but not necessarily the force field. It's
want to keep some limitations to it, because otherwise, you know, the Doctor would get out of things far too easily, and where's the fun in that, really?
Yeah, Yeah. So what did you think of the kind of the 14th Doctor design then, and all of that? Were you a fan or?
I don't know. I found watching the 14th Doctor quite a strange experience because it just felt like the 10th Doctor all the time. Truth be told. I feel like they were really trying to like distinguish him and also, you know, give like open, you know, in the limited three episodes they had some kind of, you know, character arc and things, but I don't quite know if it was pulled off.
Okay.
Entirely.
Yeah. But yeah, that's fair.
I think I've really enjoyed it. I thought it had everything that I liked about David Tennant and Catherine Tate back in the day, but it felt like the character had matured a bit. He was a bit more, a bit more emotionally literate and a bit more caring for the companions, and just a little bit older and wiser. He seemed throughout the three episodes.
Mm-hmm. Although it still does make me wonder why maybe we couldn't have just had the Metacrisis Doctor. You know, because you could have got the exact same thing without having to create, the third David Tennant Doctor.
That could have been interesting. I mean, I don't know how they would have brought him over from the parallel universe, but that potentially could have been quite interesting.
Yeah, you had to create something, then if Rose isn't there, you would have had to have some kind of hand-wavy explanation for that, but they did a number of hand-wavy explanations. It wouldn't have been, out of line, certainly.
Definitely. Well, I believe, unfortunately, that's all we've got time for. So thank you ever so much for coming on and participating in our quiz. No worries. And thank you for sharing your thoughts on this episode. I think definitely an enjoyable episode anyway. So thank you. Thank you for coming along and joining in the discussion there.
Yeah, thanks, Kate. Lovely to talk to you.
Lovely to talk to you. And we'll keep in touch, and we'll definitely have to get your responses to future episodes as well.
Oh, definitely. I look forward to it.
All right. Thanks so much. We'll chat to you soon.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Oh, I feel like there were some really interesting takes there. Actually, she's got some really interesting insight.
Speaking of interesting takes.
Interesting takes, yeah.
Should we hear what our fans have to say? I don't Indeed. Know if we can call them fans. People. People who've liked our Facebook page.
who we hope will magically transform into fans.
Yes, over time. John Emson says, amazing episode, alternately fun, menacing and moving in all the right places. Very impressive debut from Shooty, full of energy and charm. I now have high hopes for his Doctor. I just wish they could have pushed it out to 90 minutes and given us more of the Toymaker. 10 out of 10.
Cool. Yeah, yep. I would agree. I think we've definitely said we thought it could benefit from being longer, definitely. Yep.
Similarly, David Geldard says there was so much packed into it, but it was so entertaining. Some of it felt very reminiscent of Last of the Time Lords, like the musical section. Neil Patrick Harris was fantastic, very believable, and conveyed the character perfectly. My favourite part was the dolls, such an iconic creepy Doctor Who moment. Shooty seems wonderful, I really like him, and I'm excited to see how he adds a different dimension to the character. You'll always get people moaning because it makes bold choices, but that's so important in a 60-year-old show. Very entertaining, visually impressive and expensive, and seems to have elevated Doctor Who's status once again, but I'm still not keen on Bonnie Langford.
Interesting.
That's the only thing we've had about Bonnie Langford, but...
Poor old Bonnie. I remember hearing that she got quite a lot of hate at the time, so that's unfortunate that's carrying on slightly.
I think her character's definitely matured a bit since the Sylvester McCoy years. There's a lot less high-pitched screaming these days.
I think that's interesting what he was saying about, like people obviously complain, but I mean, obviously I didn't like the bi-generation, but other than that I thought it was a completely solid, very entertaining episode. And I do think, some people are very like overly critical. Like there's been a lot of like very negative comments that I've seen on various like clips and stuff and on social media. And I just think I just felt like it was quite hard to find fault with, to be honest. I mean, you might have certain concepts within the episode that you personally don't like, but like I do think people have a tendency to be quite overly critical. Like, I'm not sure what your problem could be with, like, Neil Patrick Harris just generally. Like, I thought he smashed it out of the park, to be honest.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of love for Neil Patrick Harris in these comments.
Yeah.
Philip Carter kind of agrees with you on bi-generation. He says, whilst the bi-generation is an interesting concept, RTD would have been wise to hint at it for a while before it happened. The way it was written feels like the first draft of fan fiction rather than a short, thought-out addition to a huge sci-fi universe.
Mm, yeah, would totally agree with that.
Sue Cook says, absolutely loved everything about it. It had me on the edge of my seat cheering, biting my nails and crying. Also, will the TARDIS being accessible mean that unit scientific director Shirley will become one of the Doctor's new companions? That'd be amazing.
That's a good point, actually. That was really nice. That was a lovely little touch, having a wheelchair accessible TARDIS. That would be cool if we get to see more of her and she gets to have a few adventures, actually. I quite like that idea.
Yeah, she's a great character. And it was very touching as well what she said in the behind the scenes Doctor Who Unleashed about them having been on set and a disabled fan in a wheelchair having pointed out to Russell T. Davies, I think, that the TARDIS wasn't wheelchair accessible, and that's what made him decide that it needed to change.
That is really sweet. And I saw a post from her on social media, actually, where she was saying, like, it's a picture of her with, like, the ramp, and she's saying, like, oh, for all, you know, for all those kids who are in a wheelchair, like, this one's for you, because she obviously kind of perhaps felt, you know, a bit left out when she was growing up watching Doctor Who. So I thought that was really nice.
Herald of Creation says, oh,
great name.
Didn't like it, thought it was less than a sum of its parts, a series of well-executed set pieces that failed to develop a coherent narrative. As soon as we got to the bi-generation scene, I wanted David Tennant gone.
Yeah,
it's a bit
same.
Harsh. But,
same.
But yeah, similar to what you were saying.
Would agree with that. David needed to get gone, but, like, I don't quite see what the issue was with the rest of the episode.
Yeah, no, I think that's harsh, but I see where he's going from. Alan Pearson says, it was brilliant. I love the new Doctor, so flamboyant. Excellent. Sasha Grove says, Doctor Who has always been weaponized cringe, and the giggle delivered. Loved it. Weaponized cringe. Perfect.
I wouldn't necessarily say cringe. It was cringe, but...
Yeah, I think there's a crossover between cringe and camp, and...
I feel like camp would be a better description. I would agree, though. I think it definitely brought the fun.
And, oh, one for Star Trek fans here. Inky has just posted the gif of Q dressed as a Mexican playing the trumpets to Captain Picard. Which, yeah, I guess that's sort of exactly what the Spice Up Your Life scene was, isn't it?
Yeah.
A modern update of that.
Actually, that is such a great, like, comment, because I definitely feel like the toy maker gave, like, Q vibe. Like, I love that scene. It is one of my favorite scenes in the whole of Star Trek. Just Q appearing in a sombrero, just the like Mon Capitan, like, it was, oh, and I can totally see how the toy maker definitely brings that vibe. I love that. That's
yeah,
great.
I hadn't thought of that until I see that comment, but yeah, spot on. Okay.
Yeah, I think that just about sums it up, really, to be honest. Some very some very intelligent comments there, I think. Yeah, the bi-generation is going to be one that splits people down the middle, obviously, but I think... I didn't even... I promise that was not even deliberate. I didn't even think of that, but yeah, I am a comedian, clearly. But yeah, I feel like it's going to be one that people are divided over, but yeah, I think it will be a concept that will hopefully grow on me if they continue to reference it. So I'm willing to like be convinced, but I definitely felt like a lot of people have said that it needed more explanation and build up, perhaps. We'll see on that one what they kind of do with it going forward, I guess. And on that note, once again, I have failed to keep us on time. To be fair, I think we're just settling into a new time for the show. I think we're just
building its rhythm.
It's building its rhythm. I think we're just going to accept that it's like an hour and 15 minutes now. I think we're just going to kind of go with that being how long it takes, to be honest. But thank you very much for listening, as always, and thank you for all your comments. We really appreciate the people who've taken the time to write in. It's great to hear your thoughts. keep the reactions coming. We'll be back for the Christmas special, which is actually only in a couple of weeks now. We haven't actually got that long to wait till the Christmas special, so we'll be back with an episode on that and sharing our reactions to that. So yeah, keep an eye out for news on social media. We'll update you and keep the reactions coming, keep the thoughts coming. We really appreciate hearing from you, and you can email us, obviously. It's blueboxpodcast@starburstmagazine.com if you want to email in, or just get in touch via social media, reply to our posts. And it's great to have so much engagement. So thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you at Christmas.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Hope you have a good Christmas or whatever it is that you celebrate, and enjoy the church on Ruby Road.
Indeed. Happy festive period.